Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Business news, views, and insights from across the globe.
Welcome everyone to our podcast series, Hidden Growth Champions. Today we take on a little bit of a different format. We invited one of our team members, Tesh, to join us and to talk about her work, particularly with regards to corporate venturing. So it's a new format. It's also one where she'll be posing some questions to me and I'll be posing some questions to her. And where we talk about a topic that's close to our work and one we have seen in much of our engagements with clients. So hopefully it will be relevant and interesting for everyone listening. Tesh, thank you for making time for us. I know we normally meet on client sites and Zoom calls and other ways in which we engage. Thank you for making time for this and being on our virtual studio. And perhaps for our audiences, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you, Sal, and thank you for the opportunity. I'm really looking forward to this podcast. It is a topic that is of significant interest to me as well. So quick introduction from my side. My name is Tashley Woodley. I've got over, 15 years of experience in investment banking and fund management on both the buy side as well as the sell side of transactions across multiple sectors, where I've helped both large corporate and small business to realize value. I've also managed a multi-fund investment team with over 200 million of corporate and institutional funds, where we were backing entrepreneurial businesses in the tech space, in chemicals, oil and gas, transport, as well as manufacturing. Currently, I am part of the Ascend Tribe, where I work a lot with corporates, helping or partnering with them to connect corporate strategy with their M&A ambitions to create sustainable value. I'm particularly passionate about innovative funding solutions that address the global challenges facing our environment and society today, and the role that business can play in leading disruptive, impactful, and collaborative change.
That's fantastic, Tash. I know we're going to delve into more of that in a moment, but let me kind of just kick it off with the first question, which is describing what corporate venturing is. It is a term that's used often. It is sometimes misused or stretched. But in your experience, from everything you've seen and what you worked with, how would you describe corporate venturing?
Thanks, Sir. When I see corporate venturing, to me, it represents a structural collaboration, if anything, that happens between the corporate and its ecosystem to accelerate growth and innovation. And that collaboration itself can happen both internally and externally. An example of the internal collaboration would be where companies create and invest in a space within the organization for originating and testing new ideas, which could lead to new businesses and new products, etc. The external collaboration happens where companies then begin to partner and invest in external companies, usually startups. And corporate venture capital, or CVCs as it were, can take many forms, from the very sort of simple on-balance sheet type investments to having separate funding vehicles altogether. And typically what I've seen is this sort of split between the two structures. So you have what you call the evergreen structure. And this is where the corporates opt to make single, very opportunistic minority investments on balance sheet into startups. It's a very nice way for corporates to enter the world of venture capital. It allows them to build capability. It allows them to increase their awareness, the experience when it comes to startups, and also to slowly sort of work their way towards majority type investments. Alternative to that would be where corporates opt to be more deliberate by building a portfolio of assets through a series of investments, still very much guided by the strategy of the organization, but with a very clear investment thesis of which assets do we invest in, how do we engage with them, how do they complement each other, how do they build upon each other. So literally, you know, almost putting the puzzle pieces together. And then you have what you call the closed fund structures. And again, within that, there's lots of options. I mean, the first one being where corporates may opt to set up their own CVC fund. So it's a separate vehicle with its own mandate, its own management team. It usually would carry its own incentives, its own targets and KPIs, and would operate as an independent fund. Obviously, again, strictly in line with the corporate and its strategic objectives. The second option would be where corporates choose to invest as an LP or a limited partner in an external fund. And I mean, there are lots of options here for corporates to look at. There are multiple funds out there at the moment. And of course, I mean, one of the considerations would be, you know, corporates would look for funds or mandates that strategically align with their objectives. If a corporate is looking for more diversity, I mean, whether that be across sectors or even across the life stage of the asset class, which in this case is the startup, I mean, they could look at, you know, investing in multiple funds as opposed to a single one. Other options I've seen is where corporates are looking for scale and they're looking for much more impact. They might opt for an industry fund. And probably the third option that I think is quite interesting is where corporates choose to co-manage a fund. So they take on the role as a co-GP or the co-general partner. And together with a VC firm, they will manage a fund. So it's a nice coming together of the two worlds that allows the corporate to leverage off the skill and expertise of the VC firm, but at the same time, building that capability within its own organization. So these are just some of the structures that are out there. And of course, you know, they carry their own pros and cons, and every organization will now need to look at, okay, exactly what is it we're trying to achieve and which of these makes the most sense for us. It is by no means a complete list. I think as corporates delve more and more into CVCs, they start to refine their objectives a bit more. They start to get a bit more clearer about, you know, how exactly do they want to leverage the ecosystem? How exactly do they want to engage with the ecosystem? And of course, you know, there's the broader shifts and changes, for example, regulatory changes that I think will start to have more of an impact on the CVCs. And I think we're likely to see more variations of these structures sort of come into being, because CVC is by no means is going away. In fact, it's growing. Global stats have shown us that, you know, in the first quarter of 2021 alone, roughly 30% of all funding for venture deals came from CVCs. And the total quantum of funding for CVCs has literally doubled from 2020 to 2021 during the pandemic, to something staggering like $283 billion. And there's some well-known CVCs out there, one of which is BMW iVentures, who is also said to be taking on the traditional VC firms when it comes to portfolio performance. So, you know, corporates are definitely starting to delve into much bolder options. They are moving into territories that traditionally were not theirs, which in itself is creating massive changes in the ecosystem as we know it, which I guess then leads me to the question to you, Saar. Tell us about what are you seeing from the work at Ascent when it comes to corporates making these shifts? What are those driving factors? What's influencing it? What's making corporates step over the boundaries, making those bolder decisions and looking to do something different and to sort of challenge the traditional way of business? What are some of the things that you see that is driving that shift or causing the influence?
Yeah, it's such a great question, Tash. And you know, if I think of the why, not just what we're seeing, but what's really driving it, I think a couple of driving forces come to mind. The one that everyone speaks about is technology and, you know, the convergence of various technologies and therefore the acceleration we're seeing in market testing, commercialization, and scaling up. We, in fact, in collaboration with a number of global futurists, have been tracking some of these key technologies. In fact, we have a list of 14 of those that are in the process of converging, various stages, but already having an impact on the underlying economics of a sector, whether we're looking at financial services, payments in particular, or whether we look at other industries. So that's kind of the one that is very much in the light. It's very much in the public domain. But not less important are innovations and the changing economics and therefore the scale at which management innovation takes place, in which regulatory innovation takes place. And you spoke about this, Tash, in just a while back. As these regulatory changes take place, it unleashes a whole wave of new possibilities. It unleashes a whole wave of areas of one's ecosystem that become viable, that become within reach, that become something within which we can establish a sustainable future fit business. And as a result of it, we're seeing more and more organizations taking bolder steps, certainly from what we've seen in 2020 or even early 2021, and we're now seeing much bolder steps being taken place. And I guess that's the last part or the third driver that I wanted to speak about, which is the leadership driver. I know we're going to speak a bit later in our conversation about leadership mindsets and how critical they are to this journey. But we are seeing bolder moves, and those are being driven by a recognition and an underlying mindset shift that's taking place, where organizations see themselves differently. They see themselves more as open ecosystems. They see themselves more as contributing to society in a different way. And as a result of some of the early work and some fantastic work being done, you spoke specifically about BMW, but a whole host of others that we can speak about, they're growing in confidence. And therefore, you know, whether it's driven by their digital transformation efforts and having now a foundation to work from, whether it's being driven by greater collaboration with customers and therefore now seeing the bigger opportunity, whatever that underlying experience has been, we see the bolder moves taking place. So those are, for me, some of those driving forces that within a changing ecosystem, within industry boundaries being much more diffuse and much more open, and therefore one can play more creatively and in new spaces, that organizations are considering and in fact in some cases making some very firm commitments to corporate venturing and related vehicles. Tash, that kind of leads me to a question to you, which is, why do corporates, in what you've seen, opt specifically for corporate venturing as compared to other vehicles? When does it make sense to choose corporate venturing versus the other options? When does it not? Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
I think this is a very important question, Saar, because the why will differ between companies, of course, and the why is also very critical in paving the way for how the corporate will design and execute its corporate venture unit. So some of the whys, or let's call it the investment thesis that I have seen, range from the traditional financial return. Because, I mean, startups offer us the promise of double-digit growth, because usually the market for the product or the service is still growing and expanding. So there's lots of opportunity for high growth and high return. But there's also the reasons that are more strategic. And these would include things like corporates looking to make more of an impact, to explore new technologies, to embrace new business models, looking for growth opportunities, both for the core and possible adjacent businesses. They're looking for building new capabilities. I think back to the days of M&A, which originally started, it was very much around scale. Everyone was buying to be the biggest and the best and to up your market cap. And even that space has completely changed to now where corporates are looking more for scope. It's like, how am I building for capability? How am I bringing in new innovative ideas? How am I getting access to new markets and new customer bases? And of course, what corporate venture units offer to the corporate, without a doubt, is that it's an avenue for you to gain new perspectives, new ways of thinking around the customer needs, around market insights. And all of those help to empower the corporate in positioning itself within the ecosystem. Now, of course, I mean, it's not financial versus strategic. You can have hybrids. You can have corporates are looking for investment potential along with strategic relevance. But those are some of the variations that I've sort of started to see in the work that I've done. When does CVC make sense? I hate to say that it depends. When I look at corporates today, the face of the competitor has changed, right? It doesn't look like you anymore. The competitor today has got minimum staff. They don't even have permanent office space, right? They seem to be attracting lots of capital. They're responding to the customers in a much more quicker and more agile way. To the points that you alluded to earlier, I mean, the competitor might find himself in a completely different industry altogether. So this is what corporates are up against. So in my view, a corporate would opt for CVC when they are really being challenged, when they need to leapfrog competitors, when their ecosystem is shifting, when new entrants are moving in, when they need to find a way to maintain relevance and find new pockets of value creation. Those are some of the reasons that would, for when CVC would make sense. Then, of course, you have the more sort of practical elements to that, which is the corporate ready for corporate venturing? Is there an openness to it? Because when you delve into the world of CVC, you need to rethink your risk appetite. You need to look at whether or not you have the capital resources to do this. You need to pay consideration to, are we clear on the processes that need to be in place so that we support the success of the CVC? Do we have the right talent to execute it? Do we have the right mindset? You know, are we open to making mistakes? Are we open to testing and trying things out? And are we ready to partner with others and to collaborate? I mean, in some instances, your partner may very well be a competitor. And is the organization open to things like that? What's also quite important, and I think we spoke about the why, is, and I can't emphasize it more, is that clarity on the why. Why is the corporate doing it? And we mustn't forget that corporate venturing is a collaboration. It's a give and take. So while it is critically important for companies to look at why they want to do it and what are their goals and what are their objectives, it's equally important for them to understand what exactly are they offering to the businesses and the startups that they're likely to invest or partner in. You and I both know that the needs of startups extend way beyond capital, right? Mm. Startups today are looking for customer base. They're looking for product validation, market intelligence, brand validation. They're looking for network of partners. Some of them may even be looking for mentorship and guidance throughout running the business. So these are some of the things that that part of the ecosystem is looking for. And so corporates, they need to have a very clear, crisp understanding of what role are we playing in that and can we offer that? And sort of to bring this together, I mean, if I think of an example that I dealt with prior to this during my fund management days, we dealt with the telco company at the time, and they were, at the time, their brand reputation was taking a bit of a dive. Their service delivery was well below par, and they had gone through a massive retrenchment exercise. And so they were desperate for looking for a way to reinvent themselves, to sort of catapult themselves and almost reignite their relevance to the broader ecosystem. And they chose to embark on CVC, and the option they chose was to go at it as an LP. So they invested in a fund. But what stood out for me that said that they were ready for it was they actively guided the mandate of the fund. So they were very deliberate in having the fund, or the mandate thereof rather, be very much aligned to the strategic objectives of the organization. They, yes. They pushed for budget approvals. So they fought against those that were looking at the risk of it, but they were able to put forth a strong enough investment thesis for it. They set aside dedicated staff within their organization that was working with the fund manager, and to the point where they were themselves actively contributing to the pipeline that the fund was actually looking at. In terms of the fund itself, I think they understood, one, the risk appetite of the organization, but also the different expectations that were there. Expectations from the market, because they were not looking good at the time. Expectations internally from business unit leaders, from managers, from the executive team, from the employees themselves. Mm. And so they worked with us to structure a fund that addressed all of those different expectations. So we had a sort of a carve out of the fund, which focused on sort of the later stage investments. So here they were investing in companies that have got at least, you know, minimum 4 to 5 year track record, which made it easier for them to take back to their corporate, right? Here was a company that's already working. We're putting in some growth capital. We can easily bring this company back into our supply chain. We don't have to stress too much because they've already built the capacity. So you're minimizing risk. Then they were open to a part of the fund focusing on very much the innovative tech startups. This is very early stage investments. And this is where they started to dabble in new and innovative ideas. And I think the benefit that they got was not just the investment in the company, but the insights that they got about their own business, about how they could be supporting, as a telecoms company, how they could be supporting these new technology companies that are coming up, because a lot of them are going to need access to data. They need steady infrastructure, et cetera, good mobile packages and things like that they could sort of offer to these clients. So it helped them to see new avenues of income for them as a business as well. And then lastly, they got into a point where they had seen enough of a proof point or a reference point, which is relevant to them. It was close to them. They could resonate. You know, it was more than just the case studies that we would show to them from other companies. This was them. This was them saying, hey, we're doing it and it's working. And they invested in an accelerator. So all in all, I mean, it took them some time, but they slowly got to a point where they were investing along the value chain. And that for me, like, you saw the steady progress of readiness that sort of developed within the organization, which I thought was quite phenomenal, to say the least. You know, as we talk about competition and companies wanting to do better and to grow and to innovate, and like you said, there's lots of options available. CVC is just an option. that you can use to execute on your strategy. It's not the go-to for every company. Lots of things that needs to be in place for when it makes sense for a corporate to do. And perhaps you can talk to us a bit about that, Sarah, because I know Ascent deals a lot with building strategic options. Maybe talk to us a little bit about how does Ascent look at different options available to a corporate when it comes to executing their strategy? And why is it so important to even look at these options? And what relevance does it have to them? How does it strengthen their strategy or strengthen the success rate of them executing the strategy?
Thanks, Tash. Yeah. It's hugely important. And the reason it's important is that optionality, in fact, comes before the tactics. It comes before the selection of the vehicle, whether corporate venturing or otherwise. It precedes the search for possible acquisition targets or partnering options. And when we look at it from a strategy perspective, what we often find is that while organizations, you know, and we've seen many examples of this, generate really, you know, solid, sometimes exciting strategies in terms of growth, with geographical growth into new market segments, et cetera, what often lacks in those strategies is optionality. There is a set of underlying assumptions that the strategy is predicated on. And in the kind of dynamic world in which we operate, the strategy process, how the strategy is updated, challenged, refined, does not bring in optionality. And therefore, when we move into execution and we start to speak to corporate finance houses and M&A shops, et cetera, investment banks, and many other players in this ecosystem that can help organizations accelerate, what we often find is the tactics that we use are often informed by a broad strategy, but there's a missing step. And that missing step is the optionality provided by those strategic options. So let me perhaps illustrate with an example. We may, for example, be a healthcare organization. In fact, I was speaking to a number of healthcare organizations over the past week, and we may have a very solid and compelling case to expand into new markets. We, in many respects, have already been in contact with, have already identified potential partners, acquisition targets. We have a portfolio of those different opportunities, which is each, it can be profiled, tracked, updated, et cetera, et cetera. And certainly when we work in emerging markets, which is primarily where we operate, the challenge in just getting the right data is very much there. But what is often not clear is how broadly have we challenged ourselves as to what the underlying options are. At what point we decided, for example, that as a hospital group, what we are looking for are potential partners for hospital operation that is similar to ours. At what point did we decide that a certain operating model that served us in the past is the right one going forward? At what point did we decide that we are going to be the operating entity and not perhaps a partner, an external party? And these are just some examples. And when we start to look at that, what we often find is organizations end up in this pattern of taking two steps forward and one step back. They have a solid strategy, they rush forward into implementation, and then they find out that some of the underlying assumptions may not hold true, that some of the data may point to other options that could be more compelling, that what they learn in interacting with partners are giving rise to new and bigger and bolder ambitions, and therefore they've got to take a step back. Now, that iteration process in itself is a healthy process, and there's nothing wrong with it. But if we don't bring optionality into the process itself, if we don't do it by design, if it ends up as taking a wrong turn, then realizing it perhaps 2-3 steps into it, and then kind of working backwards, what we often find is that organizations are sacrificing speed and their transition into that future state that they all feel compelled to arrive at can take years longer. The returns that they experience out of that transition are significantly lower because of that deceleration that takes place. And finally, what happens is very often there is a loss of confidence in the team, loss of confidence by the board and by others who may look at some of these inadvertent turns and say, I think we could have done it differently. So for me, the identification of strategic options, which precede actual tactics of getting there, and having a strategy process in place which allows for that optionality, where optionality in fact drives the implementation process rather than being secondary to it or incidental to what comes out of the execution, is so, so important. And that's why we often end up in defining those strategic options and having those direct the execution process and the learning that takes place rather than the other way around. And Tash, that kind of brings me back to you, because you've been very involved in the definition of those strategic options and in challenging organizations as to what options they came up with. And very often a lot of value lies in that. In fact, in some cases, if you recall, we found that the only way to achieve the kind of financial and even other ambitions the organization has is to look for very different options. Mm-hmm. Where we exhaust all the traditional ones, that's where we start to find new, more exciting, bolder options, which disprove some of our underlying assumptions. So with that in mind, when we think about what then makes corporate venturing successful, if we assume for a moment that we've done that work, that we have a set of quality strategic options that guide and direct us, that enable us to learn at greater speed and help us to de-risk the execution process and our work with financial and other partners, what are some of those points that you've seen that help then realize the potential in corporate venturing?
Thank you for that. So I think every company is different. So there's by no means going to be a shopping list of things that you need to look out for. But if I look back at some of the core fundamentals, at least, that were present across the board from the work that I've done, front and center, I would say, is leadership and culture. It's critically important that the CEO owns this. And creates a culture of innovation that runs throughout the company, right? Because your new business ideas are not going to be confined to your CVC alone. What it does need to do is it changes the organization in its entirety. You start to look at things differently. You're open to new perspectives. So innovation must run throughout the organization, where ideas are going to pop up outside of the CVC as well. You're going to have people that are not part of your CVC unit, not in your innovation unit. They're also going to be excited and feel part of this process to actually add and contribute to new ideas. And therein lies that question of being very clear of why are we doing this? How well have we articulated it? How well have, as the entire organization, understood why we're doing this? How does it fit in with the strategy? Where are we going with this? Why are we investing in startups? What are we going to do with them? And all of that creates a space that is conducive for change, a space that is conducive to new ideas. You create an environment where it's okay to make a mistake. It's okay to try and test, which is very different from the organizations that we used to, where it's very risk averse. We try to do everything by the book. There's very little room to try and test things. So I think leadership and culture plays a critical role in this. The second point that I would think is probably very critical, it's almost close to, I say it's stating the obvious, but CVC benefits are long-term. So if you think that you're going to use the normal metric measuring financial performance per quarter and sort of do it in your annual report looking for all of these upticks, I think you're mistaken. All right. There needs to be a balance between the short-term targets as well as the long-term benefits so that the CVC itself is not compromised. Usually, if you're investing in this, you're in for the long haul. It's probably 5 to 7 years whole period if you're taking an equity stake. And you need to be prepared for this. So your metrics, how you're going to measure it, needs to change. So your financial metrics, you're going to start looking at things like IRR and return on capital, but you can't do that without looking at the strategic metrics. For example, access to new technology, access to new information, what is the cost savings that has come from this? So it's a balance between the quantitative and the qualitative measures, which I think is going to be, which does then lend itself to a lot of change again within the organization. If you look at how they sort of present themselves to the market, what the market is looking for, or how shareholders are looking at the organization. So it does take quite a bit of a mindset shift when it comes to that as well. And I guess closely linked to sort of the long-term nature of it would be the risk appetite. Without doubt, this is higher risk. Not all of the investments are going to work, and some of them may require more work than you anticipated. But as an organization, this shouldn't deter you. What it does mean is that you need to actively start building for it, getting in the right talent, the right skill, the right capability, building in those processes that give you the governance and the transparency so you can alleviate some of the risks, so you can address some of the concerns that maybe other stakeholders may have. Look at partnering. How you partner is as important as who you partner with. So be very clear about what am I looking for in a partner? Am I looking for someone to just hold my hand through this? Am I looking for someone to do the heavy lifting? Am I looking for someone to bring in market insights? How you structure the CVC is also going to make a big difference to the risk appetite or sort of the risk profile of the organization, rather. Where's the capital coming from? You know, do we have room for capital allocation? Are we going to open the doors to external capital providers? And what incentives have we put in place so we get people to do what they're supposed to do, so they're not distracted, they focus on the goal at hand? So those are some of the more sort of financial sort of areas or perspectives that I think is quite important. And maybe, you know, when I look at CVCs, if I stand back and look at CVCs as a whole, is to not lose sight of the portfolio view. I mean, the CVC is unlikely to be a one-deal wonder. I mean, you know, unless you find the next Microsoft or the next Facebook. But when you're building the portfolio, my experience would be, from what I see, is don't lose sight of the strategic relevance when you're chasing the investment potential. And that's sometimes easier said than done, which is why it's so important to have that crystal clear grasp on why we're doing this. So it's because, I mean, you know, if you think about it, what I've seen in organizations, it's not uncommon to find different business units in the company that have all got their own objectives, their own targets, their own KPIs, their own risk appetites. And you end up with very fragmented initiatives. So you'll have part of the business that's going to focus on supplier development initiatives. And how are we going to fund new suppliers to come into our procurement chain? You'll have another part of the business that'll look at sort of new technology products and initiatives. Another part of the business might be saying, oh, we're going to use some CSI money and we're going to support or an incubator or an accelerator. And I think therein lies a challenge there again for organizations is to maybe take a step back from that and to see how all of these are connected so that the approach that you take encourages sort of a portfolio view. You start to connect all of these and say, well, hold on a second, how is this all adding value? How is this all contributing to each other? As opposed to having these, you know, sort of silo initiatives that are being run on the side. And then probably the last thing, Saar, I guess, would be around design and execution. Because we can talk about this all day and we can talk about how great it is and all the benefits, but it really comes down to, you know, getting it done. So we spoke about the why, but, you know, the design, I would say, is to really look at the structure of the CVC. Make sure you set it up so that it works for you and not against you. When it comes to things like capital allocation, goals and targets, where do the lines of responsibility lie? How much of independence do you have from the core? Because the last thing you want is to have your CVC stunted because of red tape, because decisions are just not taken quick enough. So all of these pose a challenge and a threat to the CVC. So it's very quickly at that point to make a decision at the board and go, well, you know what, this is actually not working, and to stop it dead in its tracks before it even really had a chance. Make sure that you have the right talent and the proper processes in place. Think long and hard about the partnerships that you want to build. And the part about talent, because it constantly comes up, and I think a lot of corporates probably sit back and go, okay, so where am I going to get this talent? And sometimes, and there's, again, within that, there's so many options, right? You build this internally, you buy it, you partner with others, lots of ways to bring in the right skill and capability that you need. So as much as there is risk, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. It is possible. We've seen, like I said, the rise of CVC. Some of these CVCs are doing extremely well. They're adding greatly to the value of the organization in many ways, not just financially, not just, you know, but also from a strategic perspective, and also in the way that the organization is being perceived by the market as someone who is stepping out and doing more and innovating and making the necessary effort to understand customers better, to serve them better. And when I look at all of these things that are needed to happen in the organization, it's quite a shift. I'm sure you'll agree. I mean, this is, you know, CVC is not just another funding option. This is triggering a massive transformational shift within the organization. You're asking people to think different, to do different, to be different. What role do you see mindset play in this? And how does Ascent address this in its strategy work with clients?
Yeah, it's such a great question because it kind of comes front and center almost in every engagement we have. And there are some signs to it. So as you were describing what makes a successful CVC, I was starting to think, well, what makes an unsuccessful CVC? And one of the first telltale signs that we're on the wrong track is the leadership response to the establishment of a corporate venturing unit. If we, for example, as a leadership team are uncomfortable with listening to other voices, external voices that may have a different, very different view of where the industry is going, where the opportunity set is than ours, That's a telltale sign. We, for example, are uncomfortable with having external people, outsiders, in these management meetings where we give shape to this corporate venturing unit, where we make decisions around capital allocation, governance mechanism, et cetera, et cetera. It's a telltale sign. Where we feel, for example, that risk appetite of others is inappropriate to us, where we lean on people who we know, who we trust, who have been with us for a long period of time before considering others, and sometimes at the expense of it, it's a telltale sign. But all these things brought together, and obviously I'm just sharing a few kind of anecdotal examples, there are many more. Very often, in fact, in more than 90% of cases, they allude to an underlying mindset that is not conducive to venturing, that is not conducive, in fact, more broadly to innovation and to growing sustainably in disruptive environments. And that's really the wake-up call to many, many organizations. And in doing that, you know, we see mindset as a foundation to building the right strategy. It's a foundation to engaging others in the organization and beyond it differently. It's a foundation to make decisions differently. And there is a process both to identify and recognize your own prevailing mindset and to start to adopt other mindsets, to be able to be more versatile in how you apply mindsets. You know, there's a false belief out there that mindsets are defined in the first few years of life and therefore are immovable. They cannot be changed. And that's very far from the truth. In fact, there is a process to allow us to become more adept. There is a process to introspect. And while we can't point to mindsets directly, we infer them from behavior, thinking patterns, paradigms that we developed, underlying assumptions. There's definitely a process to shift. And when that happens, we often find that the results are tremendous. Suddenly, we find organizations that are able to achieve in a year or 18 months things that before they couldn't do in 5, 6, or 7. We find that organizations develop a bolder ambition as they get into the actual work. Their ambition changes. The target that they set become bigger and bolder. And very often, they are more comfortable and ready to challenge their own organization, to do things even if it can pose a risk to how currently the organization behaves, makes decisions, and ultimately competes in the marketplace. So that's been probably one of the most rewarding part of our work, is being able to bring leadership mindsets into something as hard and tangible as venturing and investments and making those kinds of decisions. But it's such a fundamental part. And when you can play both of these spots, you know how to set up the corporate venturing units, you know how to set capital allocation rules and the frameworks around it, you know how to develop a corporate portfolio that deals or caters for both early stage innovation and how it scales up into growth and ultimate maturity. If you're able to do that while being introspective and increasingly capable of shifting your own mindset, that is a very powerful combination. And that's all we see results that are tremendous.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you, Musa. I think it's fantastic how you bring together the humanness in business, you know, not losing sight of the people element and finding ways to empower the people, because through that is when you see all the successes in these organizations, in whichever options or whichever strategies they choose to pursue.
Well, Tash, this has been such a great conversation. I know we've covered so much, but it's such a rich discussion. I really want to say thank you. Thank you for coming onto our podcast. And I'm so looking forward for either of our team members to come on future episodes. This is so nice to have this conversation, not just in project rooms and in strategy sessions or one-on-one with clients, as we often do, but in fact, having it now in an open forum, as our podcast is. So really a huge thank you. And thanks for making time to be with us and share from your insights into corporate venturing.
No, thank you very much, Sa. It was an absolute pleasure. I'm happy to have the opportunity to talk about things that I'm very passionate about, and I can talk about this for hours. So thank you for the opportunity. Really appreciate it.
Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Join us next time for more business news, views, and insights from across the globe.